Welcome to the QB List Fantasy Football Podcast. I am the editor-in-chief at QB List, Eric Smith, and today I'm joined by Andy Singleton. He is the owner of Expand the Box Score and the creator of Drafting with Giants, which is another one of these big industry drafts that'll be starting up on August 1st. Lots of big names in it, and just a good reason to draft a fantasy football team early in the offseason. So I'm going to be talking with Andy about his league here. It's got some unique scoring settings, so there'll be a lot to talk about. Before I bring in Andy, just a reminder, you can follow the site at the QB List on Twitter. We are pretty deep into our team preview series right now, so we're about halfway through those. It's a really good, quick recap of the offseason. If you've been distracted, understandably so, this offseason, just a quick way to catch up on these teams from a fantasy football perspective. So check that out, but let's get into the show. I'm happy to be joined by Andy here. Andy, how you doing? And tell everyone what you've been up to lately.
Yeah, well, this has been a crazy year. I'm happy baseball is finally back. It feels like some normalcy has returned, but it's just been such a wild and strange 2020. And I don't know, you know, what's up or down anymore. My life and my schedule is always pretty hectic and crazy, but it seems as though it's just gotten even crazier. So I don't know what day of the week it is. I don't know what time it is anymore. And with all that being said, though, it's you know, always busy. A lot of fun things happening. We are drafting for football, so it seems as though we will have a season. As I mentioned, baseball back, NBA and NHL shortly returning. So, you know, football really kind of benefited with having being able to get there. Super Bowl done right before this all started, and having basically the entire offseason to kind of see other sports do it and figure it out. So I'm hopeful that they will be able to get things right from the get. Although, you know, there are some things we're going to be missing out on with training camps and you know, things that we would have seen to this point already. So we'll be a little delayed in what our actual reaction to players and positioning is, but it's trending in the right direction, so it's a good time.
Yeah, speaking of baseball, as a Cincinnati Reds fan, feels like old times. They're 1-2, lost two games to the Tigers, and it was a pretty frustrating series. So feels like normal again. I like it.
yeah, I was seeing people like Alex Fast tweeting out the Orioles sit atop the AL East, so I was letting them know, you know, soak it in, bask in that glory. Craig Mish was, you know, raving about how the Marlins are sitting atop the NL East, and I just remember tweeting out earlier, a Marlins Orioles World Series would be the icing on the 2020 cake. So,
yeah, maybe after a few weeks this will normalize, but yeah, don't count on anything this year, I'd say. So,
no.
Cool. Well, yeah, it is good to have sports back for sure, though. So let's enjoy it while we can. So yeah, let's get into it. You'll probably see hashtag DWG6 around a lot starting August 1st. That is Drafting with Giants. I was in Drafting with Giants 5 last year, did terribly. So I'm mainly going to use Andy here to help me draft a better team this year. So we'll see how many secrets I can get him to give out. But yeah, Andy, let's just start about what is Drafting with Giants and yeah, just why you wanted to do it and what some of the cool perks are at this league.
Yeah, so I'm kind of amazed at what it's become, and it still feels kind of like nothing, but at the same time there is some excitement behind it. As you mentioned, it's DWG6, which indicates that this is the sixth season it's happening. So the history of this was 6 years ago. I had a YouTube channel I was starting, Nickel Press TV, and just trying to get, you know, word out. And I was, you know, I am and was and have been good friends with Scott Fish. So the, you know, Fishbowl was in like year 4 or something at the time. And I just thought, that's a pretty cool thing. What if we did a best ball version of this? So I kind of said, Scott, I'm going to rip off the Fishbowl. Would you want to be in this Draft with Giants thing I'm starting? I'm going to do two leagues, 24 people. I'm going to do like, you know, 9 quote unquote pros and 3, you know, quote unquote fans in each of these leagues. And he was all for it. He's like, absolutely, let's do it. It started on my fantasy league. And like I said, it was two divisions of 12 each, 24 people. But it was Scott, it was Evan Silva, Sigmund Bloom, Josh Moore from 4 for 4. I'm trying to think some of the other names going back to that first year. And I was just like, wow, this is pretty cool. Like, you know, guys actually came through and, you know, supported me in this. So there were no real prizes or anything. It was just standard best ball. And then year 2, I was like, you know, let's push this up to, let's double it. So we went to 48 teams and it was still on my fantasy league. And I really didn't know what it was. I still don't really know what it is. But it really took a big leap the next year when I had started at Fantrax. Fantrax had gotten into doing content. So this is going back like 4 years now. And, I came over to do videos for Fantrax and was doing a lot of content for them once they, launched their content side. And I completely even forgot I had this thing. So a couple months after I'd started, I was like, by the way, I do this draft with Giants League that's going into year three now. Would you be interested in that? And they were like, of course we would. Absolutely. So I switched over everything to Fantrax and was really trying to help promote their football, product and just show off the uniqueness of how much you could customize the statistical scoring and everything like that. And basically that is really where Draft with Giants kind of took off and became this quirky kind of industry best ball league, because the scoring is just wonky. I mean, there's return yards in there. There's points for targets. There's negative points for running backs that get stuffed. One of the things, that I always love is like you get points for carries if you're a running back, a certain number of carries, yards after contact, I believe, or yards after the catch is one. So there's just on all these unusual scoring pieces put into it, which makes it kind of interesting and fun. And it's a best ball league, so it's really just draft and set it and forget it. So it's really not a lot for anybody. But the craziest thing is that this is now expanded to 300 teams. So we're at 300 teams this year, 150 pros and 150 Joes. And it's 25 divisions of 12 teams. And the playoff structure is a 64-team playoff bracket. So, a nod to college basketball, which I'm a big fan of, and just the March Madness bracket, which is strangely enough going to be the only 64 team bracket we have in 2020. So hopefully that will draw some more attention. But it's weird, it's wacky, it's wild, it's fun, it's different, and I'm kind of impressed at what it's become. Like I said, it's year six now, 300 participants. You were mentioning, you were asking me before we started, is there a prize pool? And to be honest, I ask people every year, if you want to donate a prize, I'd be happy to add it to the prize pool. And a lot of people always say they will, and then they never remember saying it, and I never remember who told me they would. And then occasionally I'll get somebody that won something and be like, hey, do I win anything? And I'll be like, yeah, sure. What do you want? And I wind up reaching out to some people and getting them a subscription to a couple sites or whatever. But this is definitely not the fishbowl and fantasy cares and raising over $50,000, and not because I don't want to, or not because I wouldn't. It's just I don't want to take away from what that has become, and that to me is just its own thing, and it is a wonderful aspect of this fantasy football community. So I don't want to, I already took away enough from the fishbowl with kind of copying it with this league, which Scott is still in 6 years, 6 years later, he loves it. So, I openly admit that it was a complete ripoff of the fishbowl. But I'm not going to, go to the lengths of, the Fantasy Cares stuff as well. If people are donating what they can, and it's all tied in together as being part of this industry.
Yeah. And I mean, like we were saying before the show, even Scott Fishbowl this year, it was kind of, it wasn't real formal. It was just, hey, a lot of people need help right now. So right. Donate money. That always helps you get in the Scott Fishbowl, probably your league as well. Do some good things for the community, donate some money, and it'll work out for everyone. So that's a pretty good rundown of the league. Like Andy said, this is, it's got some crazy scoring settings. Negative 3 points per an interception, while you get 5 points for a touchdown, half a point for a completion. You lose a point for drops. There's a lot of crazy stuff, but I guess I would say, Andy, probably the big one is the return yardage, right? I mean, just scanning that top, those top players from 2019, the ones that really stand out is at the receiver position. There are a few receivers with some return yardage that really get a huge boost in this format.
Yeah, absolutely do. And I haven't changed the scoring at all. You know, another difference with the Fishbowl is every year there's, you know, there's a different quirk or a different nuance that's added. I've kept the scoring as it's been for the last 4 years once we moved to Fantrax, just because it is so unique and different. But definitely some of the returners really get bumped up. And I think that offers some intrigue because you get guys that don't really have a role on a team other than being the return guy that you'll see like slotted in as like a top 30 wide receiver, just because, you know, those points add up from the return aspect. I'm trying to go through and look right now as an example. And of course I'm not finding one readily available. That,
Mecole Hardman stood out. I believe he was way up there in points.
Yeah. Mecole Hardman is definitely one. You know, Tyler Lockett used to be a big guy that, Farrell Cooper, you know, guys like that, where all of a sudden you're like, why is somebody drafted Farrell Cooper in the eighth round? and, you know, and then you realize it's because, oh, he's actually going to be one of my better wide receivers that week. And again, being the best ball format, you don't really have to pick and choose who you're starting that week. So, it, you know, it all works out kind of nicely. But yeah, it's definitely, an interesting wrinkle that gets thrown into the mix. And really, you know, like Cordarrelle Patterson, is, you know, winds up being, you know, outscored Darius Slayton. So you think and Stephon Diggs last year. So you think in a heartbeat, no, I'd want Stephon Diggs, but Cordarrelle Patterson, Deontay Johnson, we're outscoring them based on all the points that can be accumulated for other things. Farrell Cooper, as I mentioned, was a wide receiver 33, in this league. So, you can find some gems, and I think it keeps a nice balance for everybody.
Yeah, and it does reward people who prepare for it, because you don't hear as much news about who's the kick returner, who's the punt returner this year. So you may draft someone who returned kicks last year who, you know, little do you know, they lost that job into the offseason.
Right.
Or they're too valuable for the team, so they got moved off of it. So it really does reward people doing some research ahead of time, just to stay on top of some of that news that you don't hear about as often. So
And to that point, here's an example. The top five wide receivers last year were Michael Thomas, but close behind, as you mentioned, was Mecole Hardman, who was wide receiver 2 in this format. Tyler Lockett, wide receiver 3. Chris Godwin was wide receiver 4. And Steven Sims was wide receiver 5. So you look at a guy like Hardman, who they drafted not just to be a returner, they drafted to be a receiver. So if he's going to get you all those points as a returner and can be any bit of a wide receiver 2 in this, you know, vaunted offense, like he could easily repeat as, you know, top 5 wide receiver in this format. Steven Sims, who, you know, people are starting to fall in love with as just a receiver alone. If he's going to still be the return man in Washington, this is another guy who can easily repeat a top 5 performance. And nobody's thinking of drafting these guys, so you're going to be able to pick that up a little bit later. You know, but you can't wait too long, because there are some savvy people that, like you said, will be paying attention and looking for these kinds of deals and advantages. But
Yeah, that's what burnt me last year. You know, you can't go too much by ADP in a league like this. I had some return guys. I was like, oh, surely no one else is looking at them. And I let them go. And there they went, in between my next pick. I think I was on the turn, so it made it even worse. But I also have a home league with some return yardage in it. And it's just one of those things. Yeah, probably if you're eyeing one of these guys, someone else is. And don't think you're the only one who knows about that return yardage boost, because someone's going to jump on them. So it really it makes you kind of abandon ADP a little bit and makes you do your own research and stick to your guns and draft people where you think they'll go. So I just think it's a lot of fun changing up the formats.
Yeah, and that was kind of the purpose of it, was to kind of level the playing field and say, you know, the average guy versus the expert analyst, like the playing field's even. There's no hidden advantage, because, you know, you are doing this for a living as opposed to somebody who's, you know, just playing as a fan or whatever. So, you know, to me, that really is the wrinkle and the caveat. And, you know, as you were just saying, like, change it up. Like, it's definitely got its own, you know, quirks and uniqueness that really kind of make it different than any other type of league you're going to be in. So, I'm trying to keep things, you know, pretty consistent. I think 300 is just going to be the maximum every year, because you know, once you get to the playoffs, like it's only going to be 64 teams. So to try to figure out a way to get more teams in, but then narrow it down to just 64 at the end, is that's where the balance is really challenging to try to come up with. So I think just leaving it at 300, but keeping the scoring the way it is where we'll go, you know, continuing to push this forward.
Cool. So yeah, I mean, any other, just before we move on from some of the weird formatting, scoring type settings, any big takeaways you have just from the way you draft, the way you've seen other people draft, maybe even just things that someone can take to their home league, you know, regardless of the scoring, but just kind of things you learn doing these drafts here?
You mentioned it, you know, I put out a tweet a couple of weeks ago asking, you know, how much are people tied down to ADP? And you got some wide ranging answers, most of which, the majority of which seem to say, yeah, I don't use it for anything. So then you think, why are we so infatuated with ADP then? Why are there so many sites and why is there so much info and data available for it if we're not really calculating or counting on this? So you can't be afraid to feel like, yeah, this is my wide receiver five. And according to the ADP, he's going 20 rounds after where I'm considering drafting him right now. You can't be afraid to make that move. And I'm exaggerating a little with, you know, 20 round disparity, but you got to stick to your guns. And, you know, this is why you're doing your research. This is why you're doing your homework. So, you know, take the guys you want, because at the end of the day, it's also supposed to be fun. So, you know, you want the guys you want. You want the guys you like. I think one of the problems I wind up with is I'm in so many different leagues, and every year I try to narrow it down, and it just winds up, you know, picking up again. But my biggest problem, I think, is that because we talk about so many different players that I want to have, you know, shares. So I have reason to talk about these guys or be interested in them. And, you know, some leagues I'll pass on a guy I love because I have him four other places and I'll take a stab on this guy. And it just winds up like the roster construction is, you know, not always that great. And, you know, I feel like I just want to be in one league like that. You know, it's like $1,000 entry, you know, 16 teams, like really super involved and challenging, but just that one league. And I'm just going to concentrate on building the perfect roster for that. But it never seems to wind up happening. So,
right. It's when it's, you know, July and there's nothing else to do, it's hard to turn down league invitations.
So, correct.
At least yours is a best ball, like we said. So draft with Giants, best ball, probably just best ball in general, but maybe specifically to this best ball. You know, what's your strategy when it comes to best ball? Because I struggle sometimes with, on the one hand, you don't have to know when to start them. So someone like Will Fuller, when he blows up, you get that week, and that's great. So on the one hand, you kind of want to target high risk, high reward players in best ball, but then you also don't get to add to your roster all year. So if Will Fuller gets hurt in week three and you lose him, that can really throw off your roster construction. So do you have any general strategies that you found have worked in best ball, whether it's just team construction or types of players you target?
Not necessarily. I do agree with that, you know, sentiment about looking at the bigger boom or bust guys, and Will Fuller is just that perfect kind of example of it. You know, when he's healthy and he's playing, he's almost a lock to score a touchdown every time he's on the field. It's just, is he going to be able to play a full game, and how many games is he actually going to be able to play? So, you know, if you're going after a guy like Fuller, you definitely want to have some idea of, you know, who figures to be his backup in that particular role, not just the next wide receiver on the team, but the guy who's actually probably going to line up where Fuller would line up. You know, just hope for the best. Obviously, he's not going to be as good as Will Fuller, but additionally, if you're going for those boom or bust guys, I think you want some safety and conservatism as well. You know, guys like Jarvis Landry, who, you know, if you're putting a regular team together, you might say, you know, depending on the year, you might say, oh, well, I like him, but his numbers are hollow, or he doesn't score touchdowns, and you know, whatever. Now he's got, you know, Odell Beckham to deal with, where the target's going to be, but the guy year in and year out just continues to produce, and it's not, you know, top five production, but it's top 20 production, and you know you're going to get that consistency on a week to week basis. So, you know, for me, I'd want somebody to pair up like a Fuller and a Landry, where between those two guys, I know I'm getting something. And every week, regardless. You know, one is going to play and get me, you know, 10 to 15, and one may or may not play. But if he does play, he's going to get me 30 to 45. That's a huge difference, but at least I'm getting something there.
Yeah. And it's scary in best ball. You know, you can't change your roster. Depending on roster size, you may only get, you know, 5-6 running backs, 6-7 receivers. That's all you're going to get all year. And just the thought of one of them going out to an injury early on can really, put a dent in your depth. So I don't know. I found myself in best balls. I'm pretty low stakes, but I found myself ending up with quite a bit of the rookie running backs this year, the Dobbins types. People just seem to be letting them go. And I know there's a lot of risk there, but especially if I don't have to figure out what week he blows up, I'm even more into him. So I've kind of been ending up with a lot of those risky rookies this year, and hopefully it doesn't burn me too much. But then maybe you try to pick up some safer players later on, like that aren't as exciting, like a, you know, Jordan Howard or someone like that. But I have a real hard time passing up on those talented rookies. I think there's probably 6, 7, 8 of them overall, and it just seems like with this offseason, everyone's just passing on them left and right.
Yeah, the problem with the rookies, though, and, you know, I go back several years now, you know, breaking down NFL drafts and covering drafts, and that's actually where Expand the Box Score was started and founded from, was my NFL draft coverage and research. But I feel very comfortable with the rookies and, you know, talking up some of the lesser known guys ahead of time. You know, I was big. A lot of people came out of the woodwork now, but, you know, I was big on McLaurin and big on Singletary last year. Those are guys that were kind of debated, you know, heavily and then, you know, emerged. And now everybody was a fan always from day one. Right. But as far as the running backs go, like I feel traditionally much safer with a young running back, but there's so much volatility in it. And I feel like the price tag just becomes too much. Like when you look back at like David Montgomery as an example, and a lot of people loved him and they're high on him, you have to pay a premium to get him. And then he just doesn't deliver. You could get the similar, you know, production from Singletary a couple of rounds later. I'd rather take the stats on that. The most interesting thing to me though, over the last 5 years, I guess, really since 2014, was just how impactful rookie wide receivers have become in the NFL. The quarterback position was one that you never really remember rookies playing. They got drafted, they sat to learn, then, you know, that script and narrative kind of changed. But rookie wide receivers were never really ones you anticipated getting production from, just as they were trying to learn the offense and you know, learn the playbook and the bigger sized defenders that they were going to be facing at the next level and just everything about the position. And all of a sudden, like 2014 came, and it's like now you don't look at rookie wide receivers any differently than veterans. But I think there's still that stigma for guys like me that, you know, are a little older, that I just still feel hesitant towards trusting. So guys like I, you know, mentioned McLaurin, I really liked McLaurin a lot. Like I fell in love with him at the Senior Bowl, just, you know, talking to him, seeing his personality. That was really what drove it for me. It was like he had a switch. Like, you know, in play, he was a dog. He was an animal. He was going at you. As soon as play was over, he was the nicest guy in the world. And he could flip that switch like that. That was really what sold me on him, was this guy is a competitor. This guy's fast. This guy's, you know, going to be really, really talented. But I just still felt like he's a rookie wide receiver, not in a great offense. Like, you know, I didn't trust it. So I'm trying to convince myself to trust these rookie wide receivers more and more. I'm a big Jerry Jeudy guy. I've become a Bama fan over the years. So I've been team Jeudy all the way. He's been my number one wide receiver. I feel like I'm getting a lot of shares of him in a lot of different leagues I'm in. And I don't know why it's working out that way. I feel like I'm getting him pretty late. And I just look and I'm like, this is kind of incredible value if we really think that this Denver offense is going to be explosive with Drew Lock, which I wasn't huge on coming out of college, but you know, he is capable of being an elite quarterback. And then you bring in a guy like Melvin Gordon to an already pretty good running back group and a motivated Melvin Gordon at that. You got Cortland Sutton, who was everybody's, number one wide receiver a couple of years ago. Now you add Judy to that mix. Like this team, Noah Fant, like this team has so many different pieces that I think Judy can be highly productive in that offense, even as a rookie, even with all those other moving parts. So I think that's kind of a reason I'm winding up with a lot of shares of him. I kind of feel like I went off on a weird tangent right there.
I know, so. All good, man. I've been ended up with a lot of CeeDee Lamb, Judy too. I think we're on the same page. I don't think we're the types that are normally going to rush up and draft these guys way ahead of ADP most years, like some people do, and they fall in love with rookies. But this offseason just has them falling in the drafts that I'm in.
Yeah.
Maybe they're just not sharp enough drafts and I'm taking advantage of it. But, I think everyone's scared off of them. And at some point you get down in the, you know, ADP and you're looking at, you know, a Sterling Shepard, which sure he's great, but he's already had a lot of injury issues. Or,
right.
You know, maybe you take a shot on CeeDee Lamb and, maybe Amari Cooper gets hurt again and all of a sudden he's the number two receiver. So
right.
I don't know. I think there becomes a point in the draft where I would rather take the super talented rookie with maybe you don't know the floor, but you also don't know the ceiling. So I would rather take my shots on them if it's a value, but I'm totally with you. I am usually the type that's going to go with the more proven commodities, especially first three, four, five rounds of the draft.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And you mentioned, you know, Sterling Shepard, like great best ball target, right? When he plays, he's healthy, he's productive. But even at Giants offense, it's tough to figure out. Like people are starting to come around on Daniel Jones finally. I haven't met one supporter of his, but yet he's in, you know, top 10 lists everywhere you look. He's got three intriguing wide receivers. You know, when you look at the redundancy of Golden Tate and Sterling Shepard, and then you add the chemistry he formed with Darius Slayton, you know, down the stretch, and that could be the big breakout guy who can just kind of do it all. Listen, there's so many. One thing that really I think was learned in fishbowl drafts was how deep the wide receiver position is. And you really don't need to target it early. And it's hard. It's really hard because you've seen all these names where you're like, man, how is he still there?
Yep.
You know, there's a reason, because you take him there and then you're not getting any other really, you know, other positions that you're feeling quality at, you know?
Yep. No, for sure. And I ended up pretty wide receiver heavy early on in the Scott Fish Bowl. I was drafting out of the 12 spot, so it was just brutal going 20 plus picks in between. It didn't go perfectly. I still like my team overall, but maybe I should have taken one of those running backs in the third round that I don't love just to get another body in there, because running backs dry up really quick in pretty much every draft I've done this year. So
right.
You're on top of it there. Going back a little bit, you mentioned how much you liked Singletary. What do you think this year between him and Zach Moss? I mean, I think a lot of us were probably down on Moss a little bit going into the draft, and then he kind of ends up in an ideal spot here. Do you think he's, the Frank Gore only better this year and Singletary gets squeezed out some, or do you still like Singletary more than Moss?
No, I still like Singletary more than Moss. I really, really like Singletary a lot coming out of college. What he displayed to me, he's not a breakaway threat kind of guy. He's just a really tough, you know, in the trenches kind of runner. His leg strength is phenomenal. I mean, he pushes piles. He's got quickness. He's got some burst. He doesn't have long speed, but, you know, he's got, you know, 5-6 yard per carry range to him. And to me, he's a much better receiver than people gave him credit for, especially coming out of college. I like Zach Moss. I don't dislike Zach Moss. I'm a Miami fan, for college. And I just was always puzzled at how Zach Moss not only made it out of the state of Florida, but wound up in Utah, of all places. Like, this is the guy that should have been a Hurricane. He's a talented back, but I think Singletary's still a better all around player, but runner in particular. So I'm not scared off of Singletary because Zach Moss is in town now. If you look at what Singletary did as a rookie as well, he had a productive season. So if that's his floor, I think you're getting a pretty good value for where, you know, he's being drafted. One of the interesting thing to me is we're talking about rookie running backs and typically thinking how those are the, you know, safer plays to make. I wish I had, I took this screenshot a couple of years ago and I just always have it saved because it just always stood out to me so much. And I wish I remember who put it out so I could give credit, but unfortunately I did not. But it's basically a running back success breakdown of, you know, the success rate of where players were drafted. So for instance, like if a running back was drafted in the top five, he has a 20% chance of being excellent, a 36% chance of being an RB1, and a 54% chance of being an RB2. And it goes down top five, top 10, top 16, first rounder, second rounder, et cetera, et cetera. It's pretty telling when you see the drop off between these high level picks. And then when you get to like the third round, and then it just kind of falls off a cliff. So you're going to have, obviously, you know, your outliers. But basically, if a running back's not taken in the top three rounds, his chances of success are like less than the fourth round. There's a 12.8% success chance of being an RB2 and only 5% as an RB1. Meaning, you know, you can disseminate or dissect Clyde Edwards-Helaire all you want. Mm-hmm. The fact of the matter is his draft capital alone is worth the gamble. And I'm not even talking about the offense he's in, which is just a whole nother part of it. Yeah. Just the draft capital alone is worth that dart. But as far as this year's class, it was built to be a really strong running back class. And then just, you know, day by day, just one guy was coming out and another guy was coming out and then it just dwindled. And all of a sudden it was like, we got this group of like five guys that all could be number one in this class and their draft capital really kind of widely varied. I mean, when you look at like Jonathan Taylor, you know, where he wound up and he wasn't the number one running back off the board. I think the Edwards-Helaire thing was really kind of intriguing for so many reasons. That whole LSU offense for so many reasons, a lot of one-hit wonders, but I don't think they are one-hit wonders. I think they just finally found their groove. I forgot where we started with this question, but
no, that's fine. As a Bengals fan, I'm glad to hear you say you don't think they're one-hit wonders because Joe Burrow, it's the future. So
yeah, Joe Burrow really is to me the real deal. I mean, you look at the stuff he did. He reminds me most of Aaron Rodgers, where he has a strong enough arm, but not the strongest arm. Extends plays with his feet. Is not afraid to take a hit. Is not afraid to move around, and just his accuracy, and especially his accuracy on the run. In extending these plays, you can look at the leap he made this past season and say, well, this is just a season for the ages and there's no way he can repeat that. But he wasn't doing anything out of this world. You know, he was just doing what he was being allowed to do. So, it's not an athletic question with him. It's a mental question. Same for most quarterbacks. And if he can handle, and he's shown he can, if he can handle the mental aspect of the game, there's no reason to think that this isn't the guy that we saw this past season.
Yeah, and he's going to need a little bit of help from the coaching. I don't know if they'll be as good as the LSU play callers, but, every quarterback needs some help. So hopefully at age 24, I believe, he should be ready to pick things up. This offseason could throw a little bit of a wrinkle into it. But I, as far as fantasy leagues, I'm drafting him a ton, more of like a QB2, you know. But, I think he's got big upside, a lot of volume potential. I think him and Tyler Boyd are going to be a really good combo. And if A.J. Green plays, then that's great. But they've got some interesting weapons around them. And I just see him as being a high volume, also with some rushing ability, maybe give you a few hundred yards on the ground. So I would much rather take him than some of the other options around there in the kind of high-end QB2 range. And if it doesn't work out, then you move on and stream. So I know he's going to play 16 games, barring health. I mean, they're gonna have him in there from day one. So I'm way higher on Burrow than I would be most rookie quarterbacks, and I'm hoping I'm not being a homer here.
No, I don't think you are. And I think one thing I don't hear getting talked up nearly enough is Zach Taylor was a highly sought after, quarterback guru with with the Rams. And I was hoping the Jets brought him in to be their offensive coordinator a couple of years ago, but he was like, no, I'm going from quarterback coach to head coach. I'm not stopping a coordinator. And for him to be able to make that power play, and you saw, Andy Dalton is a professional quarterback, say what you will about him. He's in the top half of the league. He's not the worst quarterback in the league. He's not the best. He's somewhere in the middle. He can win you games. He can be a successful quarterback in his league. Taylor wasn't afraid to bench him and say, yeah, this is not the direction I want to go. And I also think, we were talking about these rookie wide receivers. T. Higgins at one point was the wide receiver one in this class and severely fell off throughout the whole draft process. I think that's pretty much a steal. And you were talking about Darius Slayton earlier, what he was able to do with Daniel Jones. T. Higgins to me is a better Darius Slayton. So, and Joe Burrow is a better quarterback than Daniel Jones. And I like Daniel Jones and I like Darius Slayton. This is a better combo than what you saw in New York last year. So I think a lot of people are missing the boat on T. Higgins. I see him laying, lasting pretty long in drafts as well. And if that's because you think, Tyler Boyd and John Ross and AJ Green are going to limit his touches. Well, he's already projected to possibly be starting as the wide receiver too. So, to me, it's wheels up for T. Higgins and Joe Burrow in this Bengals offense with Zach Taylor, running the show.
All right, I better move it on before the regular listeners, groan that I'm talking about the Bengals again. So I think that's a pretty good rundown of the league. As far as when you're playing in a big league like this, you're going for number one overall, it's a big field. The typical strategy is to stack, a quarterback with a receiver. But do you do anything differently when you're trying to win a big field like this, or you just kind of take best player available and, hope you can beat the teams at the end?
Yeah, I was just trying to make it to the playoffs. I was fortunate enough in the Fishbowl 2 years ago. I finished fourth overall, and I was in it all the way to the end. And I think it was Darius Slayton of all people. Speaking of him, I think had I started him, I would have won the whole thing. I wouldn't have done a onesie like Sam Lane did as a victory lap, but I was right there to take down the whole thing. Last year, I won the individual division and made it to the final 40. I think I finished in the top 40 or top 30 last year. Mm-hmm. So I've had pretty good success in fish bowls the last couple of years. Draft with Giants, I don't know that I've even made it the playoffs once in the league I put on. You mentioned going for the number one overall spot. The playoffs every year are just filled with upsets. Like, I don't think a top seed won anywhere up to the elite eight in draft for Giants. It was just upset city. So, and that was kind of the fun part of it. And that's why I wanted to get that March Madness bracket kind of feel, because people were looking and going, the 15 seed knocked out off the number two. And I mean, this was happening in every region. So I don't think there's anything to the seeding. Right. Just try to get into there. Just try to be in that top 64, make the playoffs, and close your eyes and hope for the best.
Yeah, I mean, like we said, it's best ball. So if you miss on too many of those picks, it doesn't matter how good your stack is. You need a lot of players to contribute throughout the year. So, maybe in a best ball, you probably still want a nice stack in there if you can, but it might be a little less important once you get the fields, especially this year. These teams whittled down maybe to just a few healthy starters. That could be interesting come playoff time for sure. So, but yeah, definitely redraft though. I mean, that's about all you can do in redraft is just make it to the playoffs and cross your fingers once you get there. So do that enough years in a row and you'll take down some championships. So that's usually my strategy as well.
For sure.
So yeah. I think that's a pretty good rundown. So just generally, whether it's drafting with Giants.
You're fine there, because I think it originally was drafting with Giants and then it got shortened to draft with Giants. And I don't, again, this is for something that has some legitimacy to it. I'm 300 teams and some of the people that are involved in it and that play in it every year, right. Six seasons for as something as legitimate as this is, there's, it's very, very amateur at the same time. You know, I mentioned the prize pool and even the name of it and how to get in it. Like, it's just very like, you want in? Come on.
Right.
You know,
first. Hey, we've all got busy lives. It's all right. I'll just call it DWG6, I guess.
There you go.
So, but yeah, whether it's for DWG6 or just any leagues, who are some of the players this year that you're just finding yourself drafting over and over again? You got any favorites, or maybe if it's easier, players you're avoiding? Just so far in drafts this year, what are you coming up with?
Well, honestly, let me pull up one of my teams here, because that will give me a better I think that would give me a better idea of how to answer this question. As I was saying, I'm horrible at really saying these are the only guys I'm drafting and these are the guys I'm not. I wind up trying to get some disparity on all these different teams, and you know, it hurts me, but at the same time, it makes it more fun for me as, you know, quote unquote analyst. Right. So some of the guys I find that I really like a lot or am winding up with a lot are guys like Cam Akers, who I wasn't a big fan of coming out of Florida State, but you go back to what we were talking about before with rookie running backs and the opportunity that is being presented to him. You know, I know Darrell Henderson is still there, and, you know, he was somebody I really liked. Well, I shouldn't say really liked, but liked a lot coming out of Memphis. I know he's still there, and, you know, Malcolm Brown, it just seems to not go away. You know, like Frank Gore. But Cam Akers is in a, I mean, if there was one guy I was going to label as, when we look back on the 2020 season, who was the best rookie running back, I would not be surprised at all if it was Cam Akers far and away. And people are like, man, why didn't we hype this guy up more? You know, basically, you know, this is a true, you know, this is a thumper. This is a guy with the size to be an every down back. He, you know, played behind the deplorable line at Florida State and was still able to be productive. You know, he's showed he could be a receiver. He's still learning the position and converted quarterback. So, you know, to me, this is a guy that you can obtain, you can get. You don't have to invest with him, and you could be walking away with the championship if he's on your roster.
I think Akers is interesting because when he first got drafted by the Rams, I mean, there was a lot of hype on him. People were all over him, and I was like, man, I'm not gonna end up with any Akers. It's gonna go out of control,
right?
It's gonna go too high for me, and it hasn't happened so far. I don't know if it'll happen as we get closer to drafts, but he's in a pretty reasonable range of running backs right now. So I'm right there with you. I mean, if you're looking at between him and, you know, David Montgomery and people like that, I'll take Akers every time. So yep, exactly. I'm curious to see if he's going to end up in the third round before long. But until that happens, I'm drafting him too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think some of the interesting debates are you look at like Tom Brady and Jameis Winston's numbers were basically identical last year, minus the interceptions. You know, so
a lot of interceptions.
Yes. but as far as the yardage, as far as the attempts, as far as the efficiency, all that kind of stuff, they were basically like, you know, locked in step with each other. So to see the ADPs and where people are taking Godwin and Evans, it seems appropriate. If I had my pick of one of the two, though, I think I would feel much more comfortable with Mike Evans over Godwin. I'm not saying Godwin isn't a very spectacular player or capable of repeating what he did. I think he finally hit his ceiling. But Evans just is steady and consistent. And, you know, if I felt like I can only get one Tampa Bay wide receiver, for me, it's Mike Evans. Some of the guys I think are kind of being overlooked or you know, forgotten are guys like Devin Funchess, who is in Green Bay now, hopefully healthy. You know, the best second weapon that Rodgers has had since he had Jordy Nelson and Davante Adams. Now it's Davante Adams and Devin Funchess. And you know, this is a guy that can be very productive. We saw it in the past, and he's healthy. He's motivated. Rodgers is obviously extremely motivated. This is a guy that you basically could get for free. And I think should have some value this year and remind people of who he is and you know, what he's capable of. A guy like Miles Boykin, I really, really love coming out of Notre Dame. And he finds himself with in the driver's seat to take on wide receiver one role with a quarterback that just won MVP, and kind of fits what, you know, you'd kind of want from Lamar Jackson, where he doesn't have to be pinpoint accurate. Just get it in the range of Miles Boykin, and he's got the size to go up and get it. You know, where Marquise Brown is going to outrun guys, you know, to get open, Miles Boykin has speed and also has incredible size. So this is another guy I think people are just kind of overlooking a little. You know, second year guy I like a lot. Other players, I feel like Austin Hooper, like, you know, I don't know why there seems to be so much hate towards him. I mean, he's just been productive every year. And, you know, he goes to an offense that looks on paper kind of built similarly to what the Falcons are, as far as having a couple wide receivers and, you know, guys in the backfield where the ball's going to have to be spread around. And he was able to be productive there. So if you know, I don't think anything changes for him. Only his price has gone down tremendously with this move. So, you know, you can get a nice tight end with, you know, top upside for a bargain, is at least what it seems like to me. So I'm happy to take him everywhere that, you know, people don't want him. And Kyler Murray, I think is, you know, I never feel like I want to overpay for a quarterback, especially in a one quarterback league. And this is the, you know, QB list show, so we should probably talk some quarterbacks, but Kyler Murray is in a fantastic place. You know, I think Cliff Kingsbury really is a student of the game and is going to make a lot of adjustments from what he learned in his first year. And you saw as the season progressed is when things started to click a little for the offense, for Murray, for Kingsbury, for the whole thing. So now you get another year towards that and you add arguably the best receiver in the league in DeAndre Hopkins. Right. So, you know, this to me is just, this spells tremendous upside for Kyler Murray this year. And I don't want to say easily, I guess. Yeah, easily. Did anybody truly think at the beginning of last year that Lamar Jackson would comfortably be the MVP? You know, maybe, probably not, you know, so we're kind of at that same stage where to say, you know, I could easily see Kyler Murray being the MVP of the league sounds kind of ludicrous, but a year from now, we could be looking back on, he comfortably did it. I mean, it basically, you know, has a big arm, can pass with anybody, can scramble, can run. Obviously, he's proven he's a legit NFL quarterback. Made the right decision in going to the NFL route and not the baseball route. You know, so to me, he's a quarterback that I feel like I can get a little later and not have to overpay for, and I can, you know, get huge upside from. And one other quarterback I absolutely love this year, kind of speaking of the baseball thing again, seems to be in baseball more than football. There's, you know, even odd years for players where you'll see every other year they're really good and then the opposite years they're really bad. Matt Ryan is that guy to a T, and this is a good year for him. So I think this is the year he surpasses 5,000 yards for the first time. I think he's going to be throwing 40 touchdowns. I would not be surprised to see Matt Ryan as the MVP also.
I've had a lot of Matt Ryan over the years. So as soon as you said the even odd thing, I knew exactly who you're talking about.
Yeah.
I think I'm on board with every single one of those, actually. I mean, even like Austin Hooper, I agree. It's just he's gotten way too cheap. And I was not the biggest fan of his in the first place. But yeah, he's going way too late in drafts right now. The only one I would kind of push back on is Kyler Murray, only because, and it just depends on the league. But I mean, there are some leagues where he's going as the QB3 or so. At that point, I feel like we're already drafted him at a ceiling. They did transition a little bit to a running team towards the end of the year. I mean, we all know they're going to pass it a lot with Kingsbury and Hopkins there. But I think Murray would be my only slight pushback. I would much rather get him after Dak, after Russell Wilson, after Watson, maybe in that, you know, QB7-8 range. I think if he's there, I'm on him. If he's going as QB3, though, I don't think I'm going to end up with him at all. Just like you said, I don't draft quarterbacks that early anyway, but I feel like we're already kind of banking on the breakout if we take him there.
Yeah, and that is perfectly fair and definitely accurate. But it, you know, this goes back to league to league. So if he falls in a league, you know, don't be the guy that lets him continue to drop if he falls to you at a good enough price.
Definitely. And I mean, I love him. That's the reason why I didn't end up with the whole, well, yeah, not nearly as much Lamar Jackson as I should have last year, is because I was taking Kyler Murray instead. So I've definitely been in on him. And I think, you know, that's kind of been my my basis for Burrow this year, fantasy wise, is, you know, we just saw Kyler have his ups and downs and still end up as a, you know, a starting worthy quarterback. And I think Burrow can do that too. So I don't know. We'll see. I hope he's got the breakout because he's one of the most fun players in the league. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's a pretty good rundown. Draft with Giants is coming up August 1st. It's a slow draft. I believe it starts at 10 a.m. on a Saturday, I think. So, before we get you out of here, Andy, anything we missed, anything you want to plug? I appreciate having you on.
Yeah, no, I appreciate being on and being able to discuss the league. I'm amazed that out of 300 people that are in it, that everybody is signed in. You know, I don't have to trace anybody down. So things are, you know, ready to start August 1st, as you mentioned, drafts will begin. So, yeah, hopefully you'll see a lot of DWG6 hashtags going around and hopefully people will have fun with these drafts. My partner at Expand the Box Score, Brian Curry, going to be working on putting together some sheets where you can see, you know, ADP and, you know, who's being taken where and, you know, league by league stuff. So he wants to do some fun stuff with that. So that should be fun and interesting. As far as expandtheboxscore.com itself goes, we are a week away from doing our relaunch. And it's basically just, you know, updated version. I actually kind of leaned on Pitcher List and what you guys do every year in terms of having a new iteration of the site, you know, 2.0, 3.0, 5.0 now. So it's kind of in that vein that we're, you know, just enhancing the look and feel of the dashboards a little bit. And those will be live next week. So everything's starting in August for, you know, Draft for Giants, Expand the Box Score. We have a scouting team going on. So if you're, you know, looking for college players and breakdowns, go check out and follow Expand the Box Score, XT Box Score, or you can follow me on my personal account, People's Pen. And it's pretty much it. A lot of football will be coming your way in the next couple weeks. It's going to really pick up.
Definitely. We all hope so. Awesome. We got a similar schedule going right now. Like I said, we're getting all of our team previews out at the QB List. I am at Eric Smith QBL. We will be doing a relaunch as well. I think we're doing August 10th now. Normally that'd be later than I would want, but with this off season, no preseason games, I think we got plenty of time before drafts kick into full gear. So I'm keeping an ear out for that, but we're still kind of playing it by ear this time of the year, but we should have a relaunch coming. We'll have the updated Pitcher List website for us, all that good stuff, a new logo, all kinds of cool stuff. So
nice.
So, all right. Well, thanks for joining me, Andy. Thanks everyone out there for listening, and I will talk to you next time.